Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, July 2nd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Attorney General John Kroger talks about his Environmental Crimes Enforcement Unit.
Reports on sea levels rising can't keep up with the rising sea levels. Advice, swim faster.
And Cascadia hits carrying capacity, and we've got the laws to prove it.
Portland area weather today, hot and still, high near 93. Tonight, mostly clear, low around 59, and then more of the same through the 4th.
And first, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Oregon has some of the most innovative environmental protection laws in the country. Even still, we're facing serious environmental challenges. Every major river in Oregon fails water quality standards for at least one pollutant, and Multnomah County ranks in the top 1% of counties nationwide for cancer-related threats due to air pollution. My guest today made a campaign promise to seriously go after crimes against the environment. And as Attorney General, that is exactly what my guest, John Kroger, is doing. Good morning, Mr. Kroger, and thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be on the show. Good to talk to you.
Well, first off, what we're most interested in hearing about is you created something that is rather a unique legal entity, the Environmental Crimes Enforcement Unit. Can you talk about the Environmental Crimes Enforcement Unit and why it is unique?
Well, back in the 1990s, the Oregon legislature made serious polluting a crime in our state. But those laws are rarely enforced, and the reason for that is a little bit shocking. In all of state government, at the Oregon Department of Justice, which I lead, and the 36 district attorney's offices, we don't have a single full-time environmental crimes prosecutor. And so there's no one who gets up every day and views it as their job to enforce the laws that make polluting a crime. And so one of the things I vowed when I was running for office was to create just such a unit. And I'm very happy to say that in this last legislative session, the Oregon legislature approved my proposal. And so we have funding to create the state's first environmental crimes unit. It will consist initially of an investigator and a prosecutor who will work with regulators and environmental groups and the state police to investigate and prosecute people who pollute.
Do you expect to have an order of priorities of major polluters that you expect to be able to go after now that we have this legislation in place?
Well, the first thing is to get the people hired. And so we got approval for this environmental crimes unit on the last day of the legislative session. And we've already sent out a job listing all across the state and across the country to bar associations and to prosecutors' offices looking to hire the state's first environmental crimes prosecutor. So my short-term goal for the summer is to get really great professionals who are deeply committed to both just prosecution and protecting the environment and get those persons in those positions and get them at work. And you know, I think our focus initially is likely to be more on clean water cases than clean air cases. And so I think you'll see some activity this fall.
That would be to be devoutly hoped for, considering the state of water in Oregon. There are stories all over wire services virtually every day on the issue. It's terribly important. I have to ask you just one final question. House Bill 3058, that went down. Basically, it died in committee, I believe. This is a fast-track, eminent domain type of a law, it would have been, that would have essentially seized property owners' lands in order to drive a liquefied natural gas pipeline through from Bradwood Landing to, or Coos Bay, or wherever the terminal would be, through to California. It is interesting that this battle is going to be waged in courts rather than in the legislature. Do you see any further action taking place with regard to the LNG conflict over whether to have it or not in Oregon?
Well, I think there's two separate battles that are underway. One is a legal battle. When in the last days of the Bush administration, when the federal government approved construction of a liquefied natural gas terminal on the Columbia River, I'd only been in office about a week, but we immediately sued because we thought that decision violated both state and federal law. And the most important development in that law case is that the Obama administration has entered on the side of Oregon. And so it is now Oregon, together with the United States Department of Justice, that are opposing that case because of the violations of federal and state law. It's also really interesting, this is a bipartisan issue. The Attorney General in Washington has also joined that lawsuit on our side, and he's a Republican, and that tells you something about how deep the concerns about the legality of that decision run. The other battle is a political battle, and it's going to be played out in people's conversations and people's decisions about what kind of legislature they want. We have to decide whether we want to rely on natural gas and other energy sources that are domestic, or whether we want to import things like liquefied natural gas from countries like Russia and Iran. And that political discussion is ongoing.
Thank you so much for that. It's been a pleasure talking to you this morning. My guest has been Attorney General John Kroger. Thank you so much, Mr. Kroger.
My pleasure.
In its 2007 report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change forecast a sea level rise between 19 and 59 centimeters by 2100. But this excluded, quote, future rapid dynamical changes in ice flow, unquote. The report was obsolete even before it was released. Even if all emissions stopped today, sea level would continue to rise. The current rate would continue for centuries if temperatures are constant, and that would add about 30 centimeters per century to global sea level.
More on water. As Oregon's legislature finished up the 2009 session, House Bill 3369 sounded the alarm about Oregon's future water supplies. It was passed by the House 43-16 and by the Senate 20-9 as the legislative session wound up, and it was sent off to Governor Ted Kulongoski. The bill says essentially the state's economy and welfare, quote, have been seriously impaired and are in danger of future impairment, closed quotes, because of inadequate water planning and control. The legislation concluded improving supplies and forecasts is a matter of greatest concern and highest priority. Instead of planning to need more water, why not plan on limiting growth? What this legislation says is that the region has in fact surpassed the land's carrying capacity, and we're now way past the tipping point.
Going fishing? Here's what's up. Summer Chinook numbers crossing Bonneville Dam are relatively low, and success rates for anglers in the gorge reflect that. Boat anglers tallied only one salmon for every five boats over the weekend, with bank catches one Chinook for every 11 rods. The summer Chinook season downstream of Bonneville Dam is slated to close after July 5th. Bank anglers in the Portland to Longview stretch landed more sockeye salmon than summer steelhead in the weekend creel check. Sockeye passage is peaking at Bonneville Dam right now, and it's a great week for fish viewing at the Bonneville fish viewing window.
If we could just keep it to viewing, maybe the money for habitat. Too little, too late, or better than a slap in the belly with a wet fish? The U.S. Commerce Secretary announced $7.3 million in stimulus money for Oregon to remove a dam on the Rogue River, restore salmon habitat in the Willamette River, and clean up old fishing gear in the ocean. It's part of $167 million going to 50 habitat restoration projects around the country from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
Bernie Burkholder is the longtime owner and former CEO of a Gulf Coast casino and proprietor of a ranch and trout hatchery to boot. 3 years and $14 million ago, the state of Oregon turned thumbs down on a deal to buy the lot. But Burkholder hired a prominent lobbyist and went to the legislature to keep the deal alive. Amid a flurry of 11th-hour wrangling in Salem, the legislature passed Senate Bill 545. The bill requires Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife to do a detailed study of the potential benefits of acquiring Burkholder's Desert Springs Trout Farm near Summer Lake in a remote part of Lake County.
A smile in a lobbyist will get you further than a smile alone. Yesterday, the parents of 15-month-old Ava Worthington told detectives that they never considered calling a doctor, even as their daughter deteriorated and died. Carl and Raylene Worthington say they don't believe in doctors. Theirs is sort of a single prayer system. One has to wonder what these two Bible thumpers would have done if it had been one or both of themselves who had been critically ill. Mental health treatment for the Worthingtons, or perhaps occult deprogramming, might have saved a baby's life in this case, but then the Worthingtons don't believe in timely medical help.
Yesterday, President Obama had cautious good words for Senator Wyden's idea of health care, and why shouldn't they agree? They've both received millions of dollars from the medical industrial complex. But the president said he couldn't support Wyden's plan for providing medical insurance to virtually every American. Workers would be responsible for choosing their health insurance under Wyden's plan. In return, the employers would give workers a raise equivalent to the cost of the health care that was previously offered. That pay would be taxable. Wyden stresses that new federal tax deductions would shield all but the highest earners from additional taxes. And, of course, the insurance company profits would be off the table.
Sort of like a cap-and-trade program for health care. By the time the money trickles down, you've got to ask, how much housing does it actually buy? Oregon is getting a little more than $27 million in federal stimulus money for affordable housing. The money is supposed to help fill funding gaps in financing programs such as tax credits, which have lost value due to the recession. It's all part of the $2.25 billion deal from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act again. But after the bureaucracy finishes filtering it, what will really be left for the homeless?
In southwest Portland, the watershed at Hillsdale Project is built on land long considered environmentally unsound. It has received a national award for incorporating outstanding green practices. Last week, project developers, architects, and residents of the watershed gathered in the lobby to hang a circular glass plaque on a wall, honoring the building as worthy of a Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Silver Certificate.
And Ron Paul is back. He has this bill out there, 1207, which has gained popularity on both sides of Congress with Republicans and Liberal Democrats alike. That's the weird thing about libertarians. The bill will audit the Federal Reserve. It's about time. It'll show how every penny has been printed and spent. Ben Bernanke has said that this bill will be a takeover by Congress and will threaten our monetary system and economy. If passed, the bill will only audit and view the Federal Reserve's records.
According to Gary Taylor, head of MJJCommunity.com, a dozen Michael Jackson fans have committed suicide. A friend of the singer named Jesse Jackson has posted a video on YouTube urging fans not to self-destruct. Thousands of fans plan on gathering for a vigil at the O2 Arena on July 13th. This is where he was supposed to have a live performance.
High tensions are followed after North Korea fired missiles in defiance of United Nations sanctions. Two ground-to-ship missiles were fired. A third was fired from the East Coast, and a fourth launch we haven't had the details on that one yet. This, of course, after U.S. threats of intercepting North Korean ships that are suspected of carrying weapons. The U.S. fired its own test missile this week, straight out over the Pacific towards, oh my God, North Korea.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, July 2nd, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The KBOO Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson, who's on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, flashpoints. The democratically elected president of Honduras from his speech at the UN yesterday. Also from Mexico, a report from the Continental Encounter Against Impunity and Repression, and commentary about the financial crisis.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.